The Customer Insights Show with Christoph Trapp, a top-rated live stream and podcast in the market research and insights industry. We stream live on LinkedIn, Twitter, and YouTube, and you can listen on all major podcast channels and watch on dbtv.tv. Join Christoph and his guests for a weekly discussion around topics that will help you understand your customers better. Real Talk is presented to you by VoxPopMe, the leader in video research for over a decade. Here's today's conversation.
Hey, 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 insights professionals, marketers, and anyone that wants to understand their customers better. I'm your host, Christoph Trapp. And today we have the second returning guest. And I'm a data-driven guy, and I'm trying to figure out who gets to come back. And my answer to that question is, you write a book, we invite you back. Emmanuel Probst was on the show with a second book not too long ago. Today we have Georgiana Lotti with her first book. I think we'll ask her if that's correct or not. Forget the funnel, a very, very important topic. We hear about product-led and insert the blank-led strategies that you should try, but she wrote about being customer-led. So let's find out what that means and, you know, how can we implement that kind of strategy? Welcome back.
Thank you so much. And yes, you are correct. It is our first book.
Well, it is a heavy lift to write a book. So congratulations.
Thank you. Is it ever?
And you, right. I mean, once you get it done, that's when the hard work starts, even though it doesn't feel like that.
It's true. I saw in your intro reel, April Dunford, actually, you had April on the show, which is great. A massive fan of April. She's a huge inspiration to me. And when, you know, Claire and I had first decided to write the book, we went right to April to, you know, give us the down low on what's involved and how does it feel and how long does it take and all the nitty gritty details. So she's been a heavy inspiration for us. I was happy to see her face.
And April just is working on her next book, which I don't think is out yet. So we'll have to see if she wants to come back on one of these days. Certainly she had a great insights shared by her as well. But before we jump into your book, here's a new question we ask all of our guests currently, whether we're talking about this topic or not. But what is your favorite strategy to keep a pulse on customer satisfaction?
Wow, that is a fantastic question. I work predominantly with software companies. So the answer, you know, to that question for me will definitely reflect that type of structure with a company. And so as somebody who is typically in a marketing role or a product marketing role, definitely customer success is where I go to get my sort of insights and you know, health check on how customers are doing, rely on the amazing folks in customer success. Truthfully, they're maybe my favorite people inside of companies because they are the most customer sort of obsessed of all the teams. So I do trust my, you know, my colleagues and peers over in the customer success teams to keep track of that and bring insights back to the team, to the marketing team, to the product team, to the sales team. I mean, that's my answer truthfully is like the ongoing customer satisfaction, where I go to for that are definitely the experts who spend day in and day out with our customers every day.
You know, and when you were just talking about that, I'm thinking that how we do it here at VoxPopMe, you know, the customer success team keeps track of things, but the track of things, but the other thing they do, they push it out. I mean, I can just go into all these different Slack channels and I can see what's going on. What are people saying? I can even watch video surveys, customers that come in. So I really appreciate to be able to do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's dive into your book. Okay. We already talked about that's always a heavy lift. And certainly there's many benefits for thought leaders like you to have a book. But kind of give us the backstory. Why did you decide to write that? What was the purpose? And and now where it's heading.
I would say the story is probably pretty typical in that it's been a few years that it has been on my mind to get this process down and into a book. I had a sort of experience in, and it's covered in the book, so I won't talk about it here, but I had an experience in 2013 that changed, fundamentally changed the way I thought about marketing and growing software companies. And it was really about this sort of shifting from being very business centric and thinking about life cycle and sort of these more transactional moments in our relationships with customers to being more focused on delivering customer value and the customer experience through the eyes of the customer versus the business. And so that was in about 2013. And I was heavily impacted by this. And as the story goes, I was leading marketing at the time. Our head of customer success and I, along with co-founder and head of product, we basically operationalized our customer's experience into a customer experience map and democratized that across the company. And we were wildly successful with it. The company grew 900% in revenue over the following 2 years. It had a dramatic impact on, not only our ability to empathize and understand and build really effective strategies for our customers, but also internally, it just sort of helped create a shared language and a shared understanding of our customers that all the departments and teams could really sort of leverage. So, I mean, can I entirely credit that growth to, implementing a customer journey map and operationalizing the customer experience? No, but it was, it was definitely an amazing resource and tool for us. So after going through that experience, I was convinced that like, there's a book in here. Like that was such a dramatic experience for us that I knew that more companies could benefit from that process. And that was, I left that in-house role in late 2016, early 2017. And that is when I met Claire Salentrop, who is my business partner. And Claire and I started working on a content series together, about marketing inside of software companies and how hard that is. And the more we worked together, the more we realized that actually our two ways of thinking about marketing and operationalizing and coming up with really effective strategies were really, really complementary because Claire's background was in customer research and my sort of background coming in was in this sort of operationalizing customer experience. And so we combined these two sort of skill sets of ours and realized there's a framework here that we can use with the companies that, we work with. And so we got, as we say, like business married and started using this framework with the companies that we worked with. And it worked over and over again. We had these incredible results with companies that we worked with. And then I was like, this is definitely a book and you're going to co-author it with me. So it was sort of an evolution over a number of years, but ultimately, the relationship of those two things, customer research and customer insight operationalized for teams and for, growth identifying growth opportunities. That was the sort of nucleus for like, this has got to be a book. So we started writing it in late 2021 and did the slow sort of burn with it. And spent a couple of hours a week over a long period of time. We didn't like go to a retreat or anything like that. We kept running our business and wrote this, sort of on the side. And so it took us quite a long time to write it. But now that it's done, it's incredible.
Now, since that's done, you got it done. I mean, that's all that counts. But the other thing I was looking at that picture on the screen of the book cover, mm-hmm. what I really appreciate is, I mean, you've talked about forgetting the funnel for a long time. So you carry yes. through that branding and you didn't just totally came up with a different topic. Like it all connects. And I really appreciate that because I see many, many thought leaders out there who kind of, they always flip everything the second there's a new trend. Drives me crazy.
Yeah. Well, I can't take credit for that. Truthfully, we put three titles to our community and asked them to vote. And far and away, they said, no, forget the funnel is the thing that makes most sense. It is it's the thing that people can really get behind and get alignment around and really understand. So we were, that was definitely due to our very like engaged and active and incredible community of folks.
That's awesome. And that's also a great strategy to get the book in front of people, even when it's not out.
We did a lot of that. Yeah.
We had Wes Bush on the show to talk mm-hmm. about product-led growth. And you're talking about customer-led growth. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us what's customer-led growth? What's the definition? And what does that mean?
Yeah. So in general, I think about these like X-led growth sort of models as like where most growth in your company sort of comes from. So if you, you know, you think about product-led growth, the idea there is that the product team and the product itself is largely responsible and looked to for growth in the company, as opposed to a company like, you know, if you imagine like HubSpot, and this was my experience at Unbounce, we were largely marketing led. This is especially true when you're in the category creation space, right? You've got to be prolific on the marketing side, very, very loud in the problem space when you're in a category creation space, which HubSpot was in for a number of years. HubSpot's a little bit of a unique in that they started out as marketing led and they have shifted into other areas as companies should. But there's, so marketing led is when, you know, marketing is looked to for the majority of growth. There's also sort of engineering led too. Not a lot of people really talk about that, but that's when you get into sort of Facebook territory where you're thinking about, you know, these minor tweaks that can have massive impacts on the growth of the company. There's also sales led, which is relatively straightforward and that people can understand. But our sort of whole MO is really that for any of those strategies to be effective, you need to be customer led first and foremost, because you're never, I mean, think about product led growth, right? You're never going to be able to build an effective, highly converting, high resonant, and you know, appropriate experience for your customers in a scalable, low touch way, unless you understand your customers very, very deeply, and have a lot of sort of understanding of their needs when they need it. And that requires being customer led. And so I'm a huge fan of product led growth. I love product led growth. Wes Bush is a good friend of mine. And, you know, even he knows, you know, fundamentally at the base of it all is you need to be customer led first and foremost. And then you can layer on strategies like, you know, product-led growth, community-led growth, marketing-led growth, sales-led or product-led sales, things like that all require a deep understanding and ongoing understanding of your best customers. And so that's sort of where we sort of see customer-led growth as being at the base foundation and helping you understand how to leverage these other sort of growth models.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I mean, at the end of the day, it comes back to you have to talk to your customers to understand what is going on, but what is the right, how do you do that? What's your philosophy? I mean, just you hinted at, you threw out your book cover and said, yeah, hey, what does everybody think, right? 20 years ago, nobody would have done that, right? They would have been like, oh my God, now people will know that I'm writing a book. And then we have, for example, when Teresa Torres was on the show, she says, you know, you should really talk to, you have this continuous discovery habits, right? Every week you talk to somebody. Yeah. So what is your philosophy on that? When do you talk to people? How do you structure it? How does it work?
Yeah. So with our book, it's a little bit different, obviously, because that was sort of bringing something new to market. And truthfully, we shared very early versions of our book. We had many, I'll say dozens of beta readers, multiple dozens of beta readers. I can't remember the exact number now. I want to say somewhere in the vicinity of 40 or 50 beta readers on our very early manuscript. We sent our book cover around for feedback. We sent our book title around for feedback, but that's slightly different since it is, that was really about bringing something new to market. It's related, but when we sort of describe the customer-led growth framework, what we like to sort of leverage and sort of lean into is the jobs to be done approach, which really sort of gets at the heart of what was it that led our customers to seek out a solution like ours? What was going on in their world? What, you know, what is the old way that they're struggling with and that they are looking to sort of fire in order to hire a new solution? So what does that struggle and that trigger moment sort of look like for them? Once they decide they've got to solve this problem, what do they do after that? Who do they go, you know, who do they go to? Where do they go to for information and to help make a decision? Once they discover that we exist, what is it about our solution that really appeals to them and stands out to them and convinces them that we understand their problem? And then when they try our product or our service for the first time, what is it about our, you know, solution that demonstrates to them that they're on the right track? And sort of how do we get them to first value? And then furthermore, when we speak about sort of the value realization stage or the desired outcome of the job to be done, what are they able to do now that they weren't able to do before? And we sort of do that sort of zoom out 30,000 foot view, look at our best customers. It's sort of this like documentary. We describe it in the book as this, you know, how I met and fell in love with your product, basically, from all the way from, you know, experiencing the problem that your solution solves all the way through to adopting that solution, reaching value realization, and even expanded and potentially, you know, value growth by using your solution and becoming sort of an evangelist or, you know, screaming from the mountaintops how much they love your product or solution and telling others about it. So that entire sort of customer experience arc, if you will, is what we lean on the jobs to be done approach to help us uncover in our research. So the style of research that we really advocate for is very focused on jobs to be done. And then once we've done that research, we can then parse it in a way that helps us identify not only our customer's job to be done, but also what that sort of evolution in our relationship with our customers looks like. And that's when we get into the nitty gritty of like how to operationalize and identify milestones and KPIs and all of that stuff. But at the root of the research itself, it really is the jobs to be done approach to help get at not demographic data. You know, we don't care about company size necessarily. We don't even really care that much about, titles or industry necessarily. It's really what is the problem that our customers are trying to solve by going to our solution and seeking us out. Because if we can uncover what our best customer's experience was, we can then take that back to our customer experience that we're delivering to our, you know, new customers coming through the front door and optimize it to better reflect what our best customers say is valuable to them. Sorry, that was a bit of a zoom out and high level, but at the heart of sort of the research is really uncovering that problem space and that desired outcome that we provide for our customers.
What's interesting to me too, when it comes to the jobs to be done network, and I know you've been on 100 episodes ago, so we've had a good chunk of guests since then. And I have to say, I'm impressed by my own memory today to remember everybody's name and who said what, which doesn't happen on every live stream here, Gia. But Stephen Wonker came on the show and he talked about jobs to be done. And he wrote one of the books. And the example he gave is, still stuck with me. He said, what's the job to be done? And this is B2C, right? Mm-hmm. A dad going to get ice cream with his son. What's their job to be done? Is it because they're hungry? They want to spend time together? Is it because they're bored? Is it something totally different? It's just like, it's this wide spectrum of potential things. And I'm like, how do you even know? How do they even know? Right? What tips do you have to kind of not just guess, but to actually figure out what it is, what is the actual job that they're trying to get done?
Yeah. I mean, it all comes down to the questions that you ask. So from a really practical perspective, the style of research that you do and the questions that you ask in your customer interviews can pull at that. But what's really important to remember is that not all your customers are created equally. And you do need to prioritize learning from, you know, what you would consider or who you would consider rather to be your best customers. So those are in general, the customers, your customers who are the happiest. So they need to be happy with your solution, you know, your product or your service as it is today. They also need to be paying, right? So they need to have that high willingness to pay and understanding of the value that you provide. So happy, paying, but also recency is important. So in other words, learning from your customers that made a purchase decision about your solution 3 years ago, probably not going to help a ton, it might help a little bit, but they made a purchase decision. They made a buying decision about your solution in a different world than today, right? Just 3 years ago is an eternity different from today. So there's that reason, but there's also recency in terms of what do they remember? Do they, you know, that the example that you just provided about that father and son, if you asked them, you know, a year later, why they went for that ice cream, they're probably going to fill the gaps in their memory with what they think you want to hear. You know, oh, it was must have been a friend's birthday, or we must have just been hungry. But if you would ask them more recently, they would remember more about, oh, it, you know, it was my son had just, you know, failed a test and I wanted to make him feel better. Who knows, right? So it's important to ask also to prioritize your research, this style of research anyway, with your customers who are more recent, because they remember more viscerally how it felt to have the problem that you now solve for them. They remember, you know, how painful it was a lot better than your longer term customers. So we generally say aim for anywhere to the, you know, maximum 6 to 9 months ago type of customers. And so if you can, you can segment out that group of customers and get them on calls. Sometimes we can also do it with surveys, depending on the number of customers that you have. You know, if you're in a scenario where you've got hundreds of thousands of customers, then I usually recommend running a very qualitative style survey ahead of time to pre-qualify folks to actually get onto interviews. But if you're in another situation, maybe in the enterprise space where you've got fewer customers, then getting a dozen or so customers on an interview and asking questions very deliberately, like what was going on in your world that led you to sign up for our product? What was the solution that you were using before? You know, what was it that motivated you to give our product a try? Once you decided to give our product a try, what was it that convinced you that you were on the right track? You know, now that you have our solution in your life, what are you able to do now that you weren't able to do before? Those styles of questions, very open-ended, right? They're not about the product. They're not about features. They're about that sort of documentary of like, take me through what this felt like for you. If you can dig at those types of questions, you can get at the heart of really what motivated somebody to choose you. And then you can look for the patterns in the responses and start to identify what those, you know, those big themes are in your customer's jobs to be done.
You know, the recency example is so important. I mean, I remember when I was flying way more than I do nowadays. Now I just sit in the same chair 24 a day. But every time I filled out a report for American Airlines, right, I'm like, I didn't like this, or this was a bad experience. They called me right away, right? Mm-hmm. And basically would ask, what happened here? What happened there? And because I still remembered, certainly that was huge. Super helpful. Yeah. Keeping that streak alive here, Gia, on me remembering name, Rob Fitzpatrick, the Mom Test author, he was also on the show. And yes, he talked about the questions, how you should ask them. So don't just say, what do you like about our new seats? You know, say how, you know, phrase that differently. So you can read his book, The Mom Test, and watch that show.
Open-ended versus closed style of questioning, really, really important for sure.
And don't lead them, you know, who's your favorite live streaming platform? You know,
yeah.
I mean, that's certainly leading. How common is it? And I've been in these situations where I could swear people were just guessing. You know, they're like, oh, we think this is going to happen. This is, you know, this, they're going to love this and it's our idea. Is that still common? And certainly when you follow a customer-led strategy, you move away from that, right? Because you're talking to customers, you're trying to figure that out. But is it common that companies do that now, or is there still stragglers, so to speak?
It's the headline on our homepage. Stop guessing. It is absolutely still happening. And there's a lot of reasons, you know, why it still happens. I mean, I can speak obviously a little bit more to why it happens in marketing, especially inside of tech companies. It is a very high pressure environment. And, at these quickly growing companies that have, maybe they have investors or a board, they want to see a certain sort of velocity of growth in the company. And there's a lot of pressure on marketing often to deliver a lot on that towards those targets, namely in the name of leads and traffic, which is my favorite thing to pick on, more leads. We're called Forget the Funnel. We talk all day long about how more leads isn't going to solve your problems. And still to this day, nine out of 10 companies that reach out to us are actually still saying, you know, we just need more leads. Our marketing isn't working. We need more leads. But ultimately, what we end up discovering very shortly after, you know, even just 15 minutes into a conversation, what we realize actually is that they've been guessing at who their best customers are. And guessing at what those best customers want. And we realize actually your problem is not a marketing problem. You don't have a channel or volume problem. You have a understanding of your customer's problem. And if you more intimately understood your customers, you'd be able to adapt your positioning and your messaging to better resonate with those better customers. And everything would, you know, start converting at a higher rate. My favorite example is this company that we worked with where we updated just a couple pages on their website with new messaging. And their sign-up rate increased by 90%, but their trial to paid conversion rate also increased 40%. And we didn't touch anything other than three pages on their website. And the gut-wrenching part of that story is that for years, this company was prolific in marketing. They were investing tons of resources into content marketing and thought leadership and e-courses and e-books and blogging, you know, four times a week, tons of top of funnel marketing, all to bring in actually what we learned was not a great fit customer. And so when we figured that out by doing this jobs to be done style sort of research, we realized actually who you should be speaking to out in the market is actually this group of customers with these specific needs and wants and motivations. And when we refined their messaging, all the wheels were greased, so to speak, on their marketing, let alone their sort of product activation and product engagement rates as well. So, I would wager to say any company who has not done, you know, customer research in the last year and a half, 2 years, certainly since the pandemic, is ultimately guessing right now, because the world has dramatically changed from a few years ago. The market has changed. The economy has changed. Undoubtedly, your product and solution has changed. The market changes all the time. Your customers' needs change all the time. So it is really important to do this type of work on a pretty regular basis. I know VoxPopMe, you know, believes very heavily in that as well. So again, even just 3 years ago, totally different world. So if you haven't done your research in the past couple of years, I would wager you're guessing at what is working for them.
I mean, it's like an ongoing thing. I don't know that, you know, I don't know if the one interview a week answer that Teresa Torres gives is the answer for everybody, but certainly it needs to be more often than every three years. I also like to pick on leads, and just to keep my streak going here, even though I cheated on that one because I looked her up, Christina Del Villar, she actually said in her book on marketing, I don't remember the name now, so there you go. But she said, the CEO said, we need 7,000 leads. And she says, how did you even come up with that number? Are there even that many quality people in our market?
Like, yeah, exactly.
Where did that number even come from? Mm-hmm. So that's why you kind of have to work backwards and kind of figure it out.
Yeah, that is wildly common. Like, so common. That happens all the time. Yeah.
It's unbelievable. Just kind of make up a number, you know, but yeah. Anyway.
And it's all on marketing. Like, just turn up the dial on marketing instead of fixing the sort of fundamentals, which is what happens, you know, sadly, what happens a ton.
Yeah. So I'm sure you've convinced everybody here to grab your book, get going with customer-led strategy. But like at a high level, how do companies even get started? Where does it start in a company? Mm-hmm. What are some easy-ish steps? I'm not going to say easy. I know nothing is ever easy, but, easier.
Yeah, I mean, it's very easy to say talk to customers, isn't it? And not quite as easy to actually implement and start executing on that advice. At the heart of it, really, it's a decision that needs to be made that, something needs to change and something is off. So for the companies that we talk to, generally, they say one of two things. They say, something's amiss with our marketing. It is not a scalable strategy. It does not appear to be the right strategy to get us to the next phase of growth that we want to get to. So often it's this, like, we haven't found our scalable marketing strategy yet. And then the other half of founders who come to us say, something is off in the way we are bringing ourselves to market and talking about ourselves. So they recognize that there's a messaging mismatch between, what they're saying and putting out into the world and what their customers actually need or how their customers would articulate their problems. So making that sort of decision to address that is definitely step one, because if you're still in the scenario where you're like 7,000 leads, that's going to fix our problem. Well, there's a step after that, which is actually saying, no, you know what? I do believe that the answers to our, questions about growth do live inside the heads of our best customers. And we should be in a position to be able to pull those insights out. And we can do that. That's step one for sure. But that's a bit of a cheat, because that's always, the first one. So to actually answer your question, I would say after your leadership team is on board with this idea of, yes, let's actually do some customer research and it can be very actionable and doable, then I would say the next piece is like figuring out who your cross-functional team will be, depending on how your team is structured. If you're at a software company, undoubtedly you would want to involve somebody from product. If you have a product marketing lead, then product marketing for sure, customer success, marketing. Those folks, maybe sales, depending on how your company is set up, or roles and sort of emphasis on different teams, because that changes from company to company, obviously. But deciding on sort of a cross-functional team to work with, I would say, is the next sort of thing to do. They're your most customer-facing type of teams. They all bring a slightly different perspective on customers, and all of their work is going to be impacted by this type of research. So really making sure you're involving somebody from product, somebody from customer success, somebody from marketing, somebody from sales is really, really an important step. And then I would say after that, once you've got that sort of cross-functional team sort of formed, it's not that you need to, use all of their time. It's not like they have to stop doing their jobs. Obviously, there should be a champion that pushes this work forward, but you do need these people involved. The step after that would be figuring out what research methodology do we need to employ here. So that's what I was talking about before. We're working with a company right now that's got 500,000 paying customers. And we can't start with interviews. We need to go to sort of a qualitative style customer survey to begin. We segment down in the ways that I described: happy, paying, recent. And then we run a survey, which very, open text field, maybe 5-6 questions. And we parse those results to qualify for outreach, to start doing outreach for interviews. And then we run jobs to be done style interviews. That would be your sort of next step. I gave you three, but I wanted to make sure I got down to the very sort of practical how to actually conduct the research, because I recognize that like mindset isn't always the favorite answer as where to start.
Yeah, even though I give that answer quite often, the mindset, it does start with that. It also depends on, obviously what you're trying to do in your research. I mean, when Karen Kraft of Johnsonville came on, she says, honestly, we are cooking for our focus group participants. We have to be in the same room with them. We can't send them a link and say, would you like this kind of, how much cheese would you like in your brats? We literally have to present them with different options. But then when we want to follow up later, after it goes to market, we might be able to send you a video survey or whatnot. So it always depends on what you're trying to do. Mm-hmm. Gia, really appreciate you coming on the show, returning to the show. Congratulations on the book again. Good luck.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. This was fun.
It was. Thank you so much for joining me. Thanks everyone for watching and listening. I'll be back on Monday with keynote speaker and author Ryan Jenkins. See you then.